Just about 3 or 4. Now, what about the general routine during these anti-submarine things? You said you went a lot of sea miles off tape. Could you just explain a bit more about what that sort of routine was like?
Well, we'd go out to collect convoys and usher them into Glasgow and Liverpool. We would do trips up to Iceland, taking the troopers up there and bringing some back when they were on leave. The Highland Princess, I think, was one of the names of the ships. And general patrols in mid-Atlantic and North Atlantic and back into the Arctic.
How did you settle into the shipboard routine? I mean,
well, there always seemed to be something going on, mainly a swing in the lamp. You know, the boys would swing the lamp there. What happened when they were in Liverpool or Litherland or wherever they went, and that would have to last us for a month or so until we came back again. And
what sort of recreations did you have, you know, when you were off duty? What would you do?
Well, I can't remember anything. I know that there was card schools that went on. I'm not particularly keen on cards. And tombola, that sort of thing. Listening to the radio, and that was about all.
Were you a nervous sailor? You know, I mean, did you worry about submarines, about being sunk and that sort of thing much?
I never gave it a thought. And that's the honest, God's honest truth. It wasn't the same as the Blitz. The Blitz was more close contact with being on board. I can't remember giving it a thought. The subject came up once or twice when we discussed the thickness of the skin of the ship. It wasn't all that thick. On one rating was concerned that aircraft bullets would go straight through. Nothing would stop them. But I can't ever recall being nervous, not even at Eccles Station.
Mate, you had a touch of claustrophobia even before. Did that bother you at all at sea?
No. I can't remember any time being claustrophobic at sea.
But you did have it sometimes. But I mean, it was something you knew you had a touch of.
Yeah, I can't remember how I knew about that.
But you, yeah. Any instance that you remember before, you know, that stand out during the first 6 months, before we get to Christmas and, well, first the Bullen sinking and then the other?
No, the trip to, I think we did a trip to Iceland and Irish Sea. Then we went into Derry for adjusting the Aztec. Apart from that, it plain sailing, and a bit annoyed because it was getting near Christmas. I couldn't get home.
Now, the Bullen went down, I think it was the 7th of December. 6th, but sounds right.
Yeah.
Excuse
me. I remember that quite
well. What do you remember of that? Because we've interviewed quite a few people from the Bullen, and you were all together, I think it was 19th destroyer.
19th Escort Group.
Mm. Can you tell what set the scene for us, if you will? You were off Cape Wrath, weren't you?
Yeah, we were.
What
off
were
Cape
you doing?
Well, I was on watch at the time, and my action station was exactly the same place as I was. I was reading CCM messages at the time, and the pipe from the bridge was open. I could hear everything that was going on up there, and suddenly someone shouted, "Bullen has copped it." I couldn't leave set to look, you know, to run out and see what was happening. I couldn't leave my station. And it was a feeling of complete impotence to just sit there and reading messages, which could have been nothing, could have been type of clothing or something like that. Well, more or less when your mates were being killed and drowned.
You knew some of the men off the Bullen?
Yeah, I knew, about half a dozen of them, I suppose. Been in their mess there, because same as they'd come over to us. Times out of 10 we used to lay alongside each other, or they were astern of us in Gladstone Dock. So there was a lot of ribald comments went back and forth, because we had an unfortunate name that rhymed with some slang that's unrepeatable. I can't say much about that.
And so you didn't actually see what happened, you just...
No, you
picked up the wireless messages, I presume, but you would...
Well, I was reading CCM from Admiralty and Library Building, so the ship shore, that I wouldn't have heard.
And what about there was a U-boat sunk. It wasn't the one that sunk the Bullen, though, by coincidence.
No.
Do you know what happened there?
Well, so the discussion went afterwards and throughout the ship, was there was a second U-boat that went and laid alongside a wreck. They got some pings on it and they decided what it was, the wreck of what ship, I don't really know. Later on, I think they dropped a couple of patterns over it. And that I can remember, I was coming off watch then, and I was relieved anyway. And I was there to see the pattern of charges go up. I think we dropped two patterns. And the terrific cheering and ratings dancing all around the ship because oil started bubbling up and bits and pieces of flotsam and jetsam coming to the surface, and they were all doing the hornpipe round and round the upper deck.
And how did you feel?
Well, I felt two emotions, really. One, that that we'd got it and done out of the way. Wonderment what happened to my friends. We dropped our sea boat with Ivan Chappell, that chap I mentioned, as coxswain and two other men. And I didn't know until I got out there that the Hesperus, they'd gone alongside the Hesperus to discharge the survivors. And the Hesperus had gone full ahead as I was unloading them. It tipped our sea boat over. And I think all but three men were killed. They went under the screws or they died, they drowned. Ivan Chappell's still alive there.
Anything else about that incident? You didn't pick up any survivors yourself, did you?
No, we didn't. Well, I was very, very angry because we thought, although Hesperus said she got a contact and it was dangerous to hang around once she got a contact, we really thought she could have stayed a little bit longer to take them on board before she moved. That's how I felt. I can realise what went through the skipper's mind. And he was taking care of his ship as he should do, put that ship first. But I was still a bit angry about it. I really was.
Did it sour relationships between you and the Hesperus crew?
No, we didn't. I can't remember seeing her after that. I think after that, she had a new skipper and they went to somewhere else. I don't know where.
Now, there was another incident. I think you said it was a Boxing Day. It's the 26th of December. In the same area, what happened there? Or was it in the same...
I don't think it was the same date. I think the Bickerton and... Trumpeter, I think it was. I can't remember now. Was sunk in the Atlantic. Boxing Day, I remember well, because the Affleck went down first, and then the Capel went down afterwards. That was off of southern England, more or less. We were doing a patrol in the Irish Sea around the Southern Ireland. When the news was leaked through to us, we picked it up on a CCM machine. It was decoded, and somebody got the buzz, as we would call it, and slipped the news around the ship that the Affleck had gone.
And the other one?
And then the Capel. That was on Boxing Day 44, the only date I think I can remember.
And that made an impression on you. Sorry, I thought you'd been in the area, but you just got the news on the wireless.
We were quite close, but we didn't attend. Well, as far as I can remember, we didn't attend.
Well, would you ever put the radio onto commercial, the BBC or anything? Did you ever play music through to the ship?
It was done, but not on my set. No,
how would that be done?
I think it was done through an amplifier and pushed over the tannoy while it came through.
Which radio would that be?
I couldn't say. I noticed none of the sets that I would read on one frequency only, and that would be set there rigid and hard. The Shipshore man, a special operator, he searched for, obviously, for German signals. And the other one was DF, the Hofstaff.
So it was just another radio. It wasn't really your thing.
No.
What sort of things were they broadcast? Were they good? I mean, was it music mainly? Or
Mainly music, yeah. I can't remember hearing any talks or anything else or programmes such as plays or things. All that sticks in my mind is Glenn Miller. You know, he was very famous at the time.
Now, after Christmas, you were on more and more of these anti-submarine sweeps. Yes. with the 19th Escort Group.
Yes.
What do you remember of them? Any contacts or any incidents you remember? It was mostly in home waters, wasn't it?
Yes, mainly. I think we operated, as I say, from Southern Ireland, Greenland, down to Iceland, rather, and Greenland, down to Southern Ireland. So we had that part, taken in part mid-Atlantic, coming in. That's as far as I know, because we were never told where we were in any case.
And did you ever get any contacts? What were they like?
Oh, we got a few contacts, yes, but unsuccessful. We dropped some patterns of charges as well, but we weren't successful. Whether it was a shoal of fish or might have been a wreck. You know. We did a lot of inshore work, which was...
What was that like?
Well, so they tell me it was a bit dicey because of the depth of water. So.
And this was, again, anti-submarine inshore sweeps.
Yeah. On one occasion, I remember, vaguely remember, going up and down the Mersey when it was reported that midget submarines were in there. There was all sorts of anti-submarine things like that. But I can't remember a great deal about it, to be honest.
What's the next thing you remember then?
I remember the next thing, I think, would be getting the buzz about we were going to Russia. That started to circulate through around the ship. Who got to know or how they got to know, I really don't know. But I think it probably was because they started giving us very thick underwear to wear. It was grey woolen long johns. That's the only protective clothes we had. So it was something unusual. We weren't given any duffel coats or sea boots or things like that, even though we were going to the Arctic.
Now this was the convoy JW66, from information you've got. You wouldn't have remembered that offhand, but you know. And you started off on the 16th of April, 1945. Yeah. What do you remember of the first couple of days as you set off then?
It's just normal routine. Yep. It's very, very quiet all the way up. It was just... and normal routine.
And what about the as you got nearer the you know into the Arctic? What was the cold like?
I didn't find it too bad. But, as I say, we weren't issued with any cold weather clothing. But I didn't even wear the long johns, to be quite honest. But then they changed my action station from the Wireless Office to the emergency. Wireless caboose. It was a midship.
Now, could you explain exactly where that was and what it looked like?
Yeah, it was just above the funnel deck, and it was about 3 foot square, 6 foot six high. Had some pipes going through there, some water mains, I think there were, and it stored radio transceiver, transmitter and receiver. Carboys of acid, sulfuric acid for the batteries. And unfortunately, Mr. Dalloway used to store his paint in there as well, which wasn't supposed to be, but didn't leave much room, did he?
And what was your equipment and what was your job in there?
My job was to relay on your messages in case of an emergency. If we were sunk in the wireless office or knocked out of action, it would be my job to take over. We had a form of Q codes that I think I can remember the one for torpedo was QLT, I think it was, yes, Queen Love Tear, followed by what side of the ship was damaged. I can remember that.
So you wouldn't. You didn't do anything unless the main wireless station was knocked out. It was basically just a sitting monitoring.
That's right.
Would you take the messages as well that you heard, or what?
No, it was kept completely clear. It was. Oh yes, sorry, it was switched on, but I never received any messages. Let me put it that way.
What was it? It's only a small room, but did that bother you before, at the time?
No, not really, because, there was enough room to get in and stand. There was no question of sitting down. And I pulled the door back anyway, which is the steel door, to give me some air, and I could see what was going on and witness the fight between one U-boat that was sunk.
Was that before you left before you got to Moment, or after? After?
No, that was after we on the way back.
So you'd started this job before you got to Moment, so?
Yeah, the practice action stations at 6 o'clock every night, and that would be my action station to go to. We had one or two, not scares, but we saw one or two aircraft. One definitely, that was hostile, but he was very peaceful and quiet, in fact, on the way up.
And what happened when you got to Murmansk? It's your first time, obviously.
Yeah, we was all sort of anxious to get to shore and see what it was like. We were given shore leave.
And what do you remember of that?
Well, we landed in Pollyanna. It was completely raised to the ground. There was just people living in mud huts and on the side of the hills, and corrugated iron over them.
Is that a suburb of Murmansk?
No, it's a town on its own, I think. The children were running around with just rags wrapped around their body, and there was about a 3-foot path, concrete path, that led into the so-called town. And all that was there was a canteen of sorts, and a post office and gallows. And if you stepped off the concrete path, you were threatened by a Russian Tommy gunner. That was the only place you was allowed to walk. And the children were, it impressed me more than anything else, I think, during the war or afterwards, that they were running alongside the path asking for chocolate cigarettes. And every time we went to give them some, so we were threatened by the soldiers. The following day when we went to shore, we made holes in our pockets, and we just simply dropped them through the holes in the pockets. So the kids got some sweets. They impressed me more than well. And in my mind, I shall never forget them.
And so you didn't have much contact. You weren't allowed to have much contact with the civilians.
We did go into the canteen, and we were given a bowl of something. I don't know what it was. It tasted awful, but we had to get it down just because I had to be polite. It tasted like bad cabbage, and it was an awful taste.
One thing I forgot about is that they were laying a minefield during this.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember much about... Was that on the way in? Or?
Yeah, on the way in.
Well, let's just briefly talk about that. I'm sorry, I've only just noticed it in your notes.
There was the O-boats, Arebi, Apollo, and then the mine laying. And they wanted to lay about 60-odd mines. I think it was about 40 foot deep to deter U-boats. So it was obvious to me that they must have known that there were some more U-boats in the area. They told us there was only three. But there was a big argument with the commandant, Russian commandant, who wasn't very pleased about these being laid, and finally gave us permission. And we served as anti-submarine screen to the other boats while they laid them. Then they went out again and took a Russian admiral, I think, with them, and run over the mines to show that no damage could be caused by just going over the top, only if he was a submarine. One of the officers in the log wrote, he was sweating like a pig.
So that was before. Anything else about when you were in Poliana? Poliana, is that not far from Murmansk? Because people often say it was to Murmansk. They don't obviously mean that. Then.
It was quite some way, as I should imagine, about from here to almost to Scotland. Or
so nothing like near it. Right, yeah. Poliana it is then.
Yeah, and Poliana is on the edge of the Barents Sea when it goes into the Arctic.
And so what about when you set off then? Had you had any, were you monitoring any signals? It would be all in code, I suppose, so you wouldn't...
No, we was off. I remember we was off watch all the time we was in Poliana. There probably was a depot ship taking signals and passing it to us by lamp, but I'm only assuming that was so. But,
There's one story we just found that you might like to tell that I'm rather amusing.
Well, I'm pretty ashamed, actually. I was told to take some signals to the Russian Wallis people on shore. Well, they had actually heard us on a barge. And I went aboard this barge and down into the Wallis office. It was very small and stuffy. And there was a figure there wrapped in furs and goodness knows what. I couldn't tell, to be honest, whether it was a man or a woman. The women out there are actually absolutely massive, and he couldn't tell the difference. And she made certain advances to me, and it wasn't until it suddenly dawned on me that she was saying, you know, she would pay in a certain way for cigarettes and chocolate. I'd done a bunk, and I remember getting through the hatchway and crashing my head, trying to escape. That was just a little aside, you know.
Now, you were escorting a convoy, I think it's RA-66, on the way out.
Yes.
And this is where you... It was meant that there were three U-boats ahead of you, but in actual fact there's, anything up to 13, it seems, from the various...
Yeah. So we were told afterwards, there were three of the new types of U-boats that, if they'd been got to sea earlier, would have turned the tide of the war in Germany's favour. So they were quite... modern boats and good boats too. But we were told 13, but it must have been well known that there was far more than that. They were approaching from all angles, and we found out later, of course, that there was about 13.
And you started off, it seems, on the 29th of April.
Yeah, we came out of Poliana and making our way into the Kola Inlet. First thing that happened was we came across some mines that had been strewn across the entrance. We had some good fun, people trying to set them off with 303 rifles, which weren't very clever. And we managed to get through without any trouble. And into the Kola Inlet.
And one first thing was that Loch Inch contacted U-307.
Yeah,
did you see much of that going on?
Yeah, I can remember having the door of the Wallis office open, the Wallis caboose open. When she came to the surface, I can see them trying to get out the conning tower. She's definitely going to go down. And then people opened up with Olicans.
From the Goodall?
Yeah. Goodall. And from other ships, I can't tell you what the other ships were. There must have been Loch Inch, Loch Shin, probably Cotton. But, I can remember seeing the tracer going and ricocheting off. They were trying, you've got to hand it to them, they were trying to get to there. I think it was a 3-inch gun that they carried. And those that got to the bottom of the ladder made their way towards the gun.
So they weren't. So it was legitimate to shoot at them. They were intending to shoot back.
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I had great admiration for them, actually.
And the next thing then is actually the actual sinking of the Goodall itself.
And that was we got a contact. We got a ping. And we raised I see the black flag go up. I think it was a black one anyway. And we were going ready to go in with hedgehogs or a pack of charges. Just quite suddenly, there was one flash. I didn't hear the sound of the torpedo hitting, and I didn't see anything. All I know is when I sort of pulled myself together, that I was inside the caboose and the door was shut. I made a grab for it to open it, and I just couldn't. It just wouldn't open. There was water coming in from somewhere. I don't know where it's coming from. I think it must have been a fractured main. And either the batteries had broken or the carboy of acid had gone. So I could hardly breathe. I couldn't see. Everything was dark. All lights had gone. All power had gone. There was nothing. I was just entombed inside this caboose. And I was wrenching and tearing at everything, trying to breathe and to get out. I don't know how long I was in there. I haven't a clue how long I was in there. Things are just one whirl.
Were you panicking, or were you trying logically to work your way out?
No, I was trying logically to work it out. I remember thinking, I'm turning the wheel the wrong way. No, try it the other way. Then I was looking for a bar that we kept in there. It was like a big lever. I thought it would help me turn the wheel. But I was gradually getting weaker and weaker, and I was gradually getting nearer and nearer to the deck. And it was a good thing in a way.
And
I think
that was the effect of the battery acid fumes, was it?
Well, I think it must have been. Yeah, I can't be certain. It was absolutely pitch dark. And as I said, there was no light and nothing like that.
Could you hear what was going on outside the cabin? Or were you,
no.
Did you know the ship was on fire, or had it caught fire then?
Well, I wouldn't know. I was being inside.
You couldn't feel the heat, though?
Well, no. And I was I don't know how many yards away from it. But finally the door opened, and I don't even know how it opened. Whether someone heard me knocking, or whether someone knew it should be open or looked inside, I don't know.
Did someone open it for you, in your view?
I don't really know. All I know is the door suddenly opened. This gush of cold air came in, or cold air that's cold and hot. Then I could see flames. And as I crawled over the transom. I couldn't walk, I crawled over. And the first person I saw was Signalman Fry, Blondie. And he was laying just outside. We were listening to Starboard at the time, and discharging oil. I tried to lift him up, but he seemed to come to pieces in my hands. One on his left side went one way and his right side went the other. And then I noticed underneath there was blood and goodness knows what, so I assumed that he'd been hit in the back and he was almost in half. I went from there, I went portside where the torpedo had hit the magazine. And I tried to get up the companionway to the wireless office, but it was strung. The mast had come down and there was halyards all over the place. I got as far as the seaboat, and one davit had gone, and the seaboat was held by the engine hog and absolutely useless. The hole was about 18 inches round, I suppose. I went from there and went through the doorway into the canteen of the galley flat. And the helmet deck was just below that. And there was just one gaping hole I could see through, and everything was on fire. It was completely covered with fire, helmet deck. And I could see the sea partly through a hole further up.